Mom, Dad, I'm not throwing shade, but the whole New Year's resolution thing, kind of slipping, no offense. Anyway, my best friend Jenny's dad, crushing it. He uses Blue Apron. He says he ordered one pan assemble and bake meals and these things called meal kits. They're all super easy to make. He keeps yelling, protein and fiber, baby. Also, the food, we tried it. So good. So maybe you check it out or whatever. Blue Apron. Get 50% off your first two orders plus free shipping with code LISTEN50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
And it's brought to you by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable. Business grows with PVI. Locally in baseball, the Nationals remain engaged in trade talks regarding Mackenzie Gore. According to insider John Morosi, Gore was 5-15 this past year with a 4.17 ERA. Breaking news this evening in baseball, free agent Kyle Tucker has been offered a contract by the Mets worth $50 million per season. Tucker turns 29 on Saturday and turned down a qualifying offer of $22.5 million per year from Chicago, the Cubs, following the season. The Commanders remain on the hunt for a new defensive coordinator. They've been linked to Brian Flores as of late, but he just interviewed for the head coaching job in Baltimore today. Elsewhere in the NFL, Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin stepped down today after 19 seasons leading Pittsburgh. He's second all-time in franchise wins with the Steelers. Is your office setup looking like a busted play? Call the pros at PVI Office Furniture. They'll come to you and help design a game plan that actually works. No hassle, no stress, just game-changing upgrades. Mention The Fan and score big with 15% off of your purchase. Get your office in championship shape at PVIPVI.com. From the Crop Metcalf 5-Star Sports Desk, Kevin DiDomenico on The Fan.
Show's brought to you by the law firm Condori and Murad. They exclusively sponsor this program, and they will take good care of you. If you mention us, you'll get a discount on the work they do for you, and they do all the important stuff. I'm talking last will and testament, living trust, medical power of attorney. Go schedule a free consultation with them today at kmlawyers.com. Mention us to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Danny, we've harped on the Dan Quinn timeout usage being a poor element of his head coaching tenure here for even when things were going well the last couple of years. The numbers came back in, and the data is not kind to Dan Quinn.
No, it's not your imagination, and it's hard to quantify these numbers exactly. So, you know, maybe there's a margin of error within this bit of data, but a guy named Tom Bliss, who I'm not overall familiar with, but he's the senior manager of football ops data science, scientist at the NFL, Columbia data science guy, Madison, Wisconsin, a whole bunch of different things.
Sounds like my kind of guy.
Yeah, just a data nerd who's here to talk about the data. So this is a chart of how NFL coaches use their timeouts in terms of per game averages, okay? There are five categories of timeout usage. One, time saving on defense. Time saving on defense, a.k.a. Grant's got the ball, minute 45 left, but I want to have the chance to get the ball back and go score. I use it on defense. Boom, timeout.
So this could be end of both halves, correct?
Yes.
So I want the ball back and or I want to save myself some time, second quarter, or end of the game.
Those are valid, good uses of timeouts. Yeah. That is a highlight here in dark blue. In light blue, time saving on offense. Same deal. I'm in the hurry up. I got 40 seconds left. I want to try to drive down the field and score. That is a great use of timeout. You want to save your timeouts for those things. The Category that affects every coach. This is normal. This happens. The failed challenge category, right? This is not as common. This is average between pretty much every coach in the NFL of 0.1 to 0.2 per game. Only a couple coaches exceed 0.3. Liam Cohen had a very bad challenge record, and Kellen Moore exceeded that, but still not a dramatic factor. It's 0.3 per game and 0.4 per game. Not a huge implement.
Which is somewhere between, when you multiply it by 17 games, like 1.5 and 6 challenges lost for a season.
A failed challenge every 4 games, or a failed challenge every 5 games, 6 games almost for Kellen Moore. Unnecessary defense. Unnecessary challenge on defense. AKA, where are you supposed to be? Where am I supposed to be? Ah, crap. Timeout. Inexcusable.
By the way, I love that somebody did the work on this, because presumably he had to go back and look at every timeout, see what was going on in the field, and go, oh, this is the defensive alignment is not right, or they couldn't get a 12th guy off, so they burned a timeout. Here's my quick question on this, though. You called a timeout before 3rd and 8. After you looked at the offense, he didn't love what you called, you're burning it, thinking this is a critical juncture of the game. Does that count as this?
Great question. I don't have any refinement there, and I'd love to know some nuance. But generally, I think of it as the case that I put out there.
Operational malpractice.
Where you go, uh-oh, we don't know what we're doing, or we're not the right personnel on the field, or we can't figure it out. We got to go, you know, the coach is yelling at somebody going, damn it, you're grabbing a face mask, timeout. And then the final category is unnecessary offense, something that Washington was horrendous at this year. So Dan Quinn is 6th worst in the league at wasting and squandering timeouts. When you add up failed challenges, which again is marginal. Everybody's kind of with
him. How is he in that?
0.2. So that, again, that's nothing. So,
but that's kind of good, though, actually.
It's middle of the pack. Yeah. Most coaches were 0.1. He was 0.2. Again, that's a negligible statistical thing.
They did multiple times this year challenge things that I thought made no sense. Remember they challenged a play when someone gained a yard one time? Early in the year. I would love to think of the specific. But people,
it doesn't come to mind, but I believe you.
They could fumble the snap or whatever, and I'm like, oh my God, they gained 1 yard. Stop. It's 2nd and 9, bro. Like, why are you challenging this? They did a couple of those this year where you go, does he know something I don't know about how this works if they win? Do you get a point out of this? But anyway, keep going.
Yeah, so that's marginal. 0.9 timeouts per game, unnecessary defense. So either his side of the ball or Joe Witt's, whatever, which is actually worse than average, but not, again, dramatically worse than average. Right, there are a couple of coaches that, or a few coaches that were ahead of that. A couple were even with that over the course of this season, but pretty bad when it came to it. So basically, a timeout per game wasted on defense. Again, that's wrong personnel. We're not saving the clock. It's, you know, we're in a bad look, and they're going to take advantage of us. Again, disorganization and unpreparedness. It was on offense, and some people want to blame this on Cliff, and that's fine. 1.2 wasted timeouts per game on offense. So averaging, again, nearly a timeout and a half per game wasted on offense. Add them up together, and you basically have north of 2 timeouts wasted, 2.3 wasted timeouts per week of your allotment of 6. Now, that may not seem like a huge deal, but again, that's 6th worst in the NFL. There are a couple names up at the top, by the way, that I was really surprised to see. So in order of failing in this regard, Sean Payton was worse. Mike Tomlin, 2nd. Sean McVay, kind of sneaky ambush, really bad there, 3rd worst. Matt LaFleur, 4th. Mike McDaniel, 5th. And Dan Quinn, 6th.
I'm not actually surprised. One of the things, I don't know why this is, I think it might be the variation of formations. Like, that's my working thesis. I've never looked this up. A lot of times, the Shanahan guys are not great at this. So you said, correct me if I'm wrong, Kyle, McVay, LaFleur, and McDaniel were all there.
So Peyton's the worst, and then it's Tomlin 2nd worst. McVay, LaFleur, McDaniel.
And so even
Kyle Shanahan right behind Dan Quinn, by the way.
If you throw Peyton into all those, it's mostly offensive guys. So maybe you're going the IHOP menu and you're talking too much. Like, McVay has been bad at timeouts. I think he would admit to this over the years. They've had a rough time in LA with this. He makes up for it in a lot of other ways. But he also talks into the headset so much.
Yep.
He is, every single time he's talking to Matt Stafford, he goes to the 15-second mark where he gets cut off. In fact, he's famous for, and I don't think Jared Goff, like, this work that well with him, or he liked it as much as some other guys do. But I remember we talked to Cousins about this years ago. He is telling you, hey, look for the curl route. I want you to throw it to 11 here. If 11's not open, I want you to look at the out route on the other side. He's like coaching you through it right before the play, telling you exactly what he wants done. And Stafford, maybe that works for him. I don't know. But I think that takes more time. And it just, the process is not good because of that.
Yeah, so there are a couple guys where I've heard this a million times from our friend Steve Zabin, that LaFleur's terrible at timeout usage. Well, that backs it up. The worst on offense in the NFL was Matt LaFleur for timeouts wasted on an offensive
they
possession.
They did it against the Bears the other night.
Yeah, nearly two per game. They were by far and away the worst in the NFL. Peyton, a timeout and a half per game. Tomlin, a timeout and a half per game. Sean McVay, 1.4. Again, I said LaFleur, 1.7 per game on offense. Kyle Shanahan, for the record, 1.4 as well.
Who are the best in the league at it?
So this is interesting. There's not a great correlation with winning and being good at this, okay? So down at the bottom, or the best in this case, Todd Bowles was number one in the league at timeout usage.
That stuns me.
Isn't that stunning?
Because in the playoffs a couple times, his clock management has been abhorrent, and it has killed them.
Totally a thing. Ben Johnson, number two.
Ben Johnson alert. Ben Johnson alert.
Wait a second. Ben Johnson was one of the great play designers and play callers of his era.
Ben Johnson alert.
And the leader of men in Chicago that's got the entire city and locker room rallying around him is also amazing at timeouts?
Great at timeouts. Kevin Stefanski,
what
third.
What can he do, Darius?
Ben Johnson alert.
Stefanski's three. Kellen Moore was four, and Dan Campbell was five. Jonathan Gannon, six, just for the record, to round it out.
A couple guys that got fired.
Yeah, so a couple guys that no longer have gigs, and a couple guys that, you know, were in charge of some pretty pedestrian or even bad teams.
I don't know, though, when you start to say, oh, these guys were good.
Father, or should I call you Steve? Since it's a new year, maybe we should start cooking fresh with fewer smoke alarms this time. Your cooking's improving, but I can see the stress in your eyes. Anna's mom used this Blue Apron assemble and bake thing during our playdate. Pre-chopped ingredients, over 40 grams of protein, and just one pan to clean up. She just tossed it in the oven and boom, plating like she's got followers. So go to BlueApron.com, Steve. Make 2026 the year you win dinner. Blue Apron. Get 50% off your first two orders plus free shipping with code LISTEN50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
And their teams were bad, and these guys were bad, and a lot of those teams were really good. It makes you wonder, does it not matter as much as we think?
Well, so
like, there's certainly end of game times where it does, but I do think there is, to some extent, like, we get more angry. Not you and I, but we do.
I do. This is my thing.
But, like, as fans, I think we get more angry about this inevitable thing that maybe is not the end-all, be-all to the extent that we think it is.
I think that's totally fair. I think, to me, you're either above or below the line of acceptability on it. And you were either helping your team or hindering them. You're hurting or hindering. Now, you can make up for it. Like Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan have pretty good offenses. They got pretty good offensive minds there, right? Where you're going to, over the course of a game, have enough plays made or seasons where it's going to help you. But to me, guys like, you know, Mike Vrabel, John Harbaugh, Shane Steichen, Mike McDonald, the really solid guys with great teams and that are decent at this, middle of the pack or even better than that, like, to me, either you have it or you don't. And the guys that don't seem to acquire it over the years. And it may just be, like, it's still on a binary. I'll still take Sean McVay to coach my team, even though he's bad at this. I'll try to work with him on it, right? We can see if we can improve. We'll actually try to address it. But I'm still on, there's enough balance sheet there. When there's not, and your team's bad, and you're bad at this, that's so hard for me to stomach because it's such a process-oriented thing. This is controllable. You could dial up the greatest play in the world, but the guy slips. Whose fault is that? It ain't yours. The play you dialed up was perfect, right? But this, I don't know what to do. Your fault. Get in charge. Get it right.
The other thing that I've jotted down that you wanted to make sure we got to before we got out of here, you brought this up in the show meeting today, and I was like, so do you want to suggest that we should be able to review this? You're like, not really. And I'm like, well, what is your point then? You're like, I don't know, but I hate when it's wrong.
Yep.
Basically, that the referees missed a contact to the helmet play on a sack against Aaron Rodgers, and you can't get over it. Now, I ask you again, that's true. He did get hit in the head on a sack, and they were wrong about it. Do you want that reviewable?
Here's what I want. Just for the record, here's the play, if people don't remember it. Steelers are down 10-6 with the football. Almost insurmountable lead for them. I'm kind of doing shtick, but I'm also kind of not. But
it
they
was
got a chance.
Four, but it felt like 30.
Yeah, they were down 10-6 with the ball in the second half. They're on their own 43-yard line, or 45-yard line, rather, when a play gets run. Aaron Rodgers gets clubbed in the head. It's the most obvious head club in the history of head clubs. He gets clocked right in the head, fumbles. The ball is picked up by Sheldon Rankings eventually, and he walks in for a touchdown. Game over. That's it.
33-yard fumble return for a major.
Ball game. That's it. It's not mentioned by anybody at any time. On the telecast, there's no, you know what they missed here, Walt Anderson or Gene Steratore, whoever they've got as their officials guy. Nobody ever just kind of goes, oh, well, no one asks about it. Nobody seems to give a damn. I don't love the rule, by the way. As guys are running as fast as they possibly can, they're getting blocked. If you're reaching out to try to touch the quarterback, it may be at the level of a shoulder pad, but maybe somebody hits your arm, so it hits them head, whatever.
I do hate that you get bailed out all the time. When I beat you like a drum as an edge, and I'm coming in clean, and I get you for a sack, but because my hand accidentally hit you in the top of the head in a way that, yes, is called 99% of the time, and it's supposed to be called 100% of the time, like on that play, there are multiple guys that are there to sack Aaron Rodgers. Yes, I bumped your head first with my hand, and I'm sorry for that. But like, did they miss the call? Yes. Should it have been roughing based on the rule? 100%. But I already hate that so much that I feel like it would have been more of an injustice to like take the sack fumble away from the Texans.
I hear all that. I've seen enough calls where a guy's trying to like bat a pass down or swat at the football, and he grazes the front of the helmet. It's like, yeah, you made contact to the head, man. Sorry about that. Where they're very protective. Sometimes. Other times, it's whoopsie-daisy. Here's what I want more than anything else. I know that sounded very river. More than anything else, really, I do. I need someone to say it. Where is my, hey, this happened? Where on the, how is it never brought up on the broadcast? It's all loose Texans defense, and they're slobbering and doing all the right things because the Texans defense is awesome. But where is somebody saying, you know what they missed right here? This glaring, giant, oh my God moment
so
that just ended the game.
With the broadcasters not pointing it out.
I want broadcasters to talk about it. I need post-game people talking about it. I need questions asked. I need the pool reporter to come down and go, hey, we missed it right there. Upon further review, that happened. We apologize. Whatever. The idea that it just never happened is infuriating to me. This is my deal in football, in basketball, in society. Whatever the rule is, we all agreed to it. We want to change the rule, let's change the rule. Whatever the rule is, I need it. I see it right there. Apply it. And if we miss it, let's say, hey, we missed this one. Nobody has referenced it. And I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. The only solution would be to be able to review those roughing calls. I actually think that's not a bad idea. Now, a lot of people are anti-challenges right. And anti-reviews. They don't want more of them. I don't mind. I don't care. I'm locking in for the game, whether it's 3 hours and 10 minutes or 3 hours and 42 minutes. Also, these college playoff games and bowl games are an hour longer than NFL games.
Oh, they're so long.
Anyway, halftime is 50 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting with people on social media the other day because I'm like, why do we need a 45-minute halftime show? Like, well, both bands have to perform. Why?
Do they?
No, they don't. They're like, sure they do. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. Okay, then they can both do 6-minute shows, and we'll have a 17-minute halftime show. But it's like three times as long as the NFL halftime. But anyway. Back to the point at hand here, like, did I see it? Yes. I hate when the announcers don't point it out, when it's an obvious thing. Or, like, this happens with PI sometimes. It's even more annoying in that regard, where they're like, nice play by the defensive back here, and it's a clear PI. Like, you've been talking all day. PI, no PI, contact on the outside. Why are we acting like this is okay? You see that sometimes. I don't know if it's because they don't want to call attention to the missed call, or they just see it differently. I'm not really sure. But it definitely happens on broadcasts occasionally. And on Prime the other night with Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit,
yep.
Same thing happened. I think it was to Jordan Love, where he got swatted in the head on a play and ended up going to the ground. There was zero mention of it at all. And you're like, That's illegal.
Just say it. Say that it happened. Say that it happened.
They showed the replay three times, and neither of them acknowledged. Like, we're all watching it.
I don't have a great rule, and I know it's slippery slope when you start talking about reviewing this or challenging that or whatever. That one was so blatant and so obvious. A, I just can't have it missed. I need someone to say I'm sorry that we missed it. I need that first. Second, there's got to be some sort of recourse. And again, if the rule, if we decide as a football watching community and the league itself decides that the rule stinks. Remember, they tried to do one where after post New Orleans Saints Rams, where the most obvious pass interference in the world didn't get called, we let you review pass interference for a year. You can challenge it just to appease them. It never was overturned. They pretty much went with whatever the ruling on the field was 90-some percent of the time. Don't have the data in front of me. And then it went away. If we decide we don't like a rule, we can fix it. That's kind of the whole point of our country too, by the way. This is the rule right now. That was so obvious. How can you miss it? B, how can no one say the Dan Quinn line, we missed it? Like, that's the part that I'm so frustrated by. So if somebody can come up with an eloquent rule when it's that glaring and that obvious, we're doing spot reviews now for certain things where you don't have to have the chain gang come out. Could we have a spot review for that where a guy gets clubbed in the head and his neck snaps sideways and he's dazed and the ball's on the ground behind him?
I generally want way more of the booth help, to your point. Like, that is so fast. It's so efficient. There's a slippery slope. I get it, where people don't want everything officiated from above and changed. But if you see it in the booth in real time, and before the next snap, you figure this out, fix it.
Because I thought I saw it live, because our angle isn't as good, but there's a straight-on angle from both in front and behind where it couldn't be more clear. Where's my little buzzer? Hey, man, he got hit in the head. He got hit in the head bad. He should probably go to the blue tent. B, he was struck in the head, and that's supposed to be illegal.
Where I'm going to part ways with you, though, is I hate that penalty.
I get it.
If you go helmet to helmet with a quarterback, no doubt. If you hit a quarterback up high, driving them to the ground and like land on their head, sure. If you, and what happened on that play was, like, you hit them in the helmet with your arm or hand as you're coming through to tackle, and it was violent, but if that happens, like, I'm never going to lose sleep over that because it's such a nothing burger, accidental, like, whoopsie-daisy moment.
I'm with you. I hate that penalty, too. It's on the books. I hate speed cameras more than
understood.
Anything. I still got to pay the fine.
You've made your case, yes. Okay. But you don't... Again, I'm asking you, let's do something about it. And you're like, I just want someone to mention it. I'll call Joe Buck. I'll make sure next time that he mentions it, if that's really the crux of this. Now, let's go to Chris in Hyattsville. What's up, Chris? How are you?
What's up? Interesting conversation, guys, as always. Listen, I think I'm really interested in that study. I'd love to see what the qualifying features were because what happens with timeouts that you don't take? In other words, timeouts you leave on the table. Like, that's an error if you should have used them. So,
great question, too, yeah.
That was not part of the study, I guess, right?
Right.
And nonetheless, also things like icing a kicker. Is that a necessary or unnecessary time?
Well, I'll say this about the icing thing. I think it's been proven. I know this is not what happened the other night because Ben Johnson got actually this lucked out for him and it worked out. I hate the icing of the kicker when they get a practice kickoff. This is something teams have stopped doing now, but it used to be at the very, very last second you would call timeout, but they would still get the snap off and they'd still get the practice kick. Well, it just seems to me like that's a great benefit. In these conditions, on this field right now, I get a practice kick and then I get to do it again. Now, the other night, McManus hit a field goal and then missed a field goal after the... But normally, I think if you're icing a guy, you want him to think about it, call it, you know, not long after he got out there, well before they line up. So he's just standing out there thinking about it, you know, in enemy territory or whatever. But anyway, go ahead.
Real quick. I think the timeouts this year are more on Kingsbury's offense than they are on Dan Quinn. And, you know, that heavy lies the crown, right? But how many times did Dan Quinn or somebody have to call a timeout because they're running a no-huddle offense, but with substitutions and the defense has to be allowed to substitute?
Yep.
And now the clock is winding down, and if they don't get the snap off, they're going to delay a game. Or they have an illegal formation or illegal shift. I feel like a lot of the timeout usage on offense was because of, like, poor procedure on Kingsbury's offense.
Very possible. And we'll get a chance to see if they clean that up in a different-looking offense this time around because they've now got David Blau calling the shots. Time for your Caps power play. Montreal in town tonight. Puck drops in less than an hour over at Capital One Arena. You'll hear the game right here on The Fan. No Tom Wilson again for the Capitals tonight, and also no Justin Sortif. That's not good. Took
That's
a puck to the face.
Montreal's a good little club. They are in the playoffs if they start.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.